Cuthbert and Edward agreed with me. Indeed, Edward had an excited expression at wonder at each new hill we climbed, and each new valley beyond it. Cuthbert, on the other hand, looked a little afraid, and glanced around at the woods we passed, as if he expected a horde of goblins to attack us at any moment. I grinned at him, and he looked away, face flaring pink with embarrassment. "I never expected to leave the valley, you know," Cuthbert said, "and here we are attacking another country." "You a bit scared?" I asked. "Well, yeah. You?" "A bit, but I'm excited as well, and keen to get the job done, find Mildred and the others, and sort out Samlin and Aidan. So, because of all that, it doesn't seem so bad." I turned to my other friend. "Edward?"
"What?"
the big lad asked. "Are you afraid?" He shrugged. Nothing bothered Edward much. He just took life as it came and got on with it. I sometimes envied him that ability. We finally turned away from our homeland and rejoined the company. The land on the other side of the river was much the same as on our side, woodlands and fields in the lowlands, then hills rising gently away from the river. The scouts reported that the tracks we were following joined a narrow road or path leading northwest, and so we followed it. We were cautious and travelled quietly with scouts out ahead of us and on each flank to look for the Welsh, but, as yet, we had seen none. After a few miles, the path turned sharply north towards the river wharf, passed between two woods, then emerged in flat, open fields, before turning again back to the west. The river was now immediately on our right. Ahead of us, no more than a mile away, was a small settlement, perhaps a dozen huts clustered around a larger one, the headman's house, most probably. Wallace gestured for me and Sigmund to go with him, and sent the company back into the woods. We slipped down into the ditch that followed the road, and then through a thorny blackberry hedge that separated it from fields running down to the river bank. Some cattle were grazing in the meadows there. Following the hedge, we approached the village until we were hidden in a small copse, barely 100 paces from it. From where we were, we could see the villagers going about daily life. Some were building a new hut near us and were pounding in the upright posts to make a frame made from ash trunks. Beyond them, a group of women were gathering together around a well and were filling jugs and pots from it. Out of sight, I could hear hammering and banging from a blacksmith or carpenter. The village was at least as big as Curdham, and so there could be over 50 men and women here. The men that we could see looked strong. We could easily take the village, but there would be some resistance, and many of our men would die.
"Blast!" Wallace cursed. "We'll have to go round it. We can't go through. Someone in the village will surely alert Samlin, and that's our surprise gone."
"I say we attack the village, burn it down, and kill them all," Sigmund said. "Serves them right, and be revenge for what they did to Wixton."
Part of me agreed. Why not inflict pain and suffering in measure for what we had suffered? Yet, another part of me knew that was not right. These villagers did not burn the villa or Wixton, or kill any of us. It's Samlin we want, and he is not here, I said. Sigmund looked at me like I was sticking my opinion in where it was not wanted, Lord Sun or not, and argued that we needed a base to operate from. By now, however, I was not listening, because I had just noticed something that made my blood boil. Standing in the centre of the village were two men. They appeared to be haggling over a barter. The goods concerned were food and a shield, a Welsh shield, with a Christian symbol on it. Well, there would be many such shields around, one looking much like another. But the man who was holding the shield did not look just like any other. He looked like, and was, without a doubt, Aidan. Aidan the slave. Aidan the traitor who sold his countrymen news of the Amber Treasure, and, as a result, caused the death of Cuthwin and many others. There, in front of me, was Aidan bartering for food, like none of that had ever happened, like he did not care. But it mattered to me, and I drew my knife and started running towards the village with one thing on my mind. I would kill Aidan.
"Kernick, what the hell do you think you're going?" hissed Wallace. "Get back here, now!"
His voice was full of authority, but I ignored it and carried on running. No one in the village had seen me at first, and I was only 50 yards from Aidan, and now I swerved so I would be able to pass between two huts. Suddenly, my legs were swept from under me and I fell, full length, knocking my chin hard against the ground so that I bit my lip and tasted blood. Head spinning, like it did if I had too much ale, I felt someone pick me up, so I struggled and hissed at them to let me go. But then I received an agonizing punch to the belly, which doubled me over. I was heaved up onto the someone's shoulder and carried away. I heard a high-pitched scream. Was that me? I wondered. Then I passed out. When I came round, I was back in the copse, and Sigmund was leaning over me. I groaned and spat out blood. I looked up at them both. They returned the glance with disgust.
What were you doing, boy? Trying to give us all away? Sigmund asked nastily.
What made you run off like that? Wallace added.
I dragged myself up to my knees and coughed, spitting up some more blood. Aidan. It was Aidan.
Your escaped slave? The one you thought told Samlin about the jewellery? Wallace asked.
I nodded and looked back at the village. One of the women by the well was pointing at the gap between the houses where I had been knocked down by Sigmund. Two men had gone and got short spears and were peering through the gap. They glanced at the cop, but did not seem to have seen us. We could see Aidan, still in plain sight, completing his trade and taking a sack of food off the villager then, heaving it over his shoulder, he walked out of the village and away from us towards the Roman fort and Samlin. As he left, I was certain that he glanced towards our hiding place. Wallace insisted we stay in the copse for 2 full hours, and then, as it started to get dark, we scampered back down by the river and so found the company in the wood.
"My lord, we are worried about you, and are about to come and look for you," Grettir said.
Wallace glanced at me before replying.
"We were seen, and had to lie low for a while, for the fuss to die down."
"Seen? But my lord, if you were seen, Samlin might know we are coming,"
Grettir pointed out. I thought about Aidan glancing towards us, and the villagers running around in panic. Feeling foolish, I looked at Sigmund, who was watching me, to see what I would say. "Guess I might as well come clean and confess," I thought. It was my fault. I saw Aidan and went to confront him. I was not thinking straight. There was silence as everyone in the company stared at me. Even Edward and Cuthbert gave me a strange look. I'm sorry. I know this is not just about my own revenge. I could not look at them and sat down on a log, feeling miserable. Wallace told the company that because of the time lost, we would now camp in the wood, post plenty of sentries and carry on at first light. Edward and Cuthbert came over to me, but seemed unable to say anything, and I ignored them. I then felt a hand on my shoulder. It was Sigmund.
"Well, lad, you're sure buggered up today. But I'll say one thing for you. It took guts to come out and admit that just now. Don't make things any easier today, of course, but folk mostly feel better about a man who'll admit to a mistake," he said.
"We'll see. I hope that Samlin doesn't know about us yet, and we can carry on in the morning without trouble." Sigmund shrugged.
"We can hope," he said, but his tone was doubtful.
Hope. It drives men forward and keeps them struggling on, whatever the odds, whatever the difficulty. But the gods don't deal in hope. They mostly deal with fate, what destiny has in store for a man. But Loki, the trickster god Loki, he deals with mischief, and that night he was abroad, mixing up his mischief. The winds carried his laughter far, and made sure that news of our passing reached the ears of the one man we hoped would not hear it. Perhaps Aidan was his agent, or maybe it was one of the villagers. It makes no difference, really. Whoever was the messenger, it seems Samlin heard about us, and, sharing Loki's laughter, he sent his men out to look for us, and now, only a few miles away, they were waiting for the chance to pounce upon us. Chapter 8. Ambush. It happened in a field between two woods. The corridor of open land was perhaps 200 yards long and 50 yards wide. We had chosen it to avoid the Welsh village to the north. Wallace, with most of the Wixton lads, and Sigmund were in the lead, followed by those from Newbold, Sancton, and Compton, whilst the men of the villa brought up the rear. The whole company was tired, having slept poorly in the damp wood the night before, and perhaps this had made us careless, so, as a result, we were strung out in a loose, dawdling line, 100 yards long.
It was when we were almost halfway across the field that, without warning, there was a guttural cry from the northern wood. The shout was taken up by 100 voices, and then 20 men charged out from the trees to our north, blocking our path. We all stopped, startled by the suddenness of it, but before we could respond, another 40 Welsh warriors ran out behind us, this time from the other wood, the trees to the south, preventing any thoughts of retreat. Finally, a further dozen emerged on either flank and lined the edge of the wood. These, being armed with bows, and without giving us a chance to react, sent a volley of arrows spitting towards us. Most of these mercifully missed us, although one unlucky man from Wixton fell dead, with 3 arrows sticking out of his chest.
"Men of Wixton, to me!"
Wallace shouted, drawing his sword. We all moved in that direction, but the Welsh, closing in from either side and pelting us with arrows, divided the company in two. Grettir looked grimly at the Welsh, and then at me, expecting me to take command. Father's parting words came back, and I heard him speaking.
"Lead them, and they will follow."
I drew my sword, and then thrust my spear up into the air, like a standard. "Men of the villa, from Compton, to me!" I yelled. For a moment, no one did anything, and they still milled around, confused and bewildered, like so many frightened sheep, so I yelled again, "Come on, you bastards, to me!" Edward and Cuthbert reacted at that, and moved to my side, and Grettir followed. Cuthbert quickly strung his bow, and reached out for an arrow. Edward braced his shield and spear, and prepared himself for the fight. The other men took a moment or two to move, but another bellowed order finally brought them close. Glancing towards Wallace, I saw that he had his men ringed around him, and he decided to copy the idea. "Form a ring!" I yelled. They looked doubtful, as this was not a formation we had practiced, yet they could see the danger coming from both in front and behind us. Soon, we had almost 40 men in a ring, 20 in the front rank, and 20 behind them. The enemy were close now, only 24 yards away. So, I thought to myself, here, at last, in this field, is where I would first command men in battle. I prepared myself for the blow to come, unstrapped my shield, and put away my sword. Then I steadied my spear, all the time praying to the gods that today would not be my last fight. "Spears over shields!" I bellowed, and the men obeyed, 40 spears now pointing out at the enemy, who in just a few moments would be upon us. Yet the clash did not come. The enemy, having hemmed us in 2 rings, halted and surrounded us. Their archers moved up and threatened us with arrow fire, but did not attack. A broad-shouldered chieftain came forward out of the enemy ranks and inspected first my men and then those around Wallace. "Saxons," he shouted in strongly accented English, "I am Peredur, chieftain of these lands. Your presence here, armed and secretive, is illegal. My prince will want to see you and know what you are doing here. We have you outnumbered and surrounded. Surrender, and you will not be harmed. If you fight, many of you and many of us will die today. We will take you to Prince Samlin." I figured the odds and sighed. Peredur was right. We were tired, damp, and hungry. I was stiff from sleeping last night in that copse. Cuthbert had only a few arrows, and there were not many other bowmen in our ranks. Few of us had fought a battle before, and if we fought one today, it was obvious that most of us would die. As much as I hated the idea, if we surrendered, we might survive. Wallace glanced over towards me, and then at the Welsh surrounding us. Sigmund, and he spoke for a moment. Then Wallace nodded his head and dropped his sword and shield. A moment later, with a great clattering noise, the rest of us threw our weapons to the ground. The Welsh came forward and collected them, and as one of them picked up my new sword, I felt almost an ache in my chest. I had only taken the weapon from a vanquished foe a few days before, but somehow it already felt mine. After gathering the spears, shields and swords off us, the Welsh herded us together and led us away. Gloom descended on the company, as what we had feared came true. We were now captives. No one said anything, but I felt the eyes of many lingering upon me, and their thoughts were my thoughts too. Had my foolish act the night before betrayed us? A few moments of anger, and now our chance of revenge, along with all hopes of rescuing our family, were gone. Maybe forever. No one said anything. They did not need to, did they? I already knew it was my fault. The Amato took us north and west along a mud track that ran in a meandering way through the dense forest that covered much of Elmet. Here and there, we saw swirling smoke arising from what were presumably villages and hamlets in the woodlands. Eventually, we met a stone Roman road running from the distant south and, I found out later, via Lloydist across the South Pennines to Eorforwick. Strange how roads play such a large role in one's life. Armies march along them. Folk use them to go to market and back. As a boy, I dreamt of where the road that ran past the villa would carry me to. Well, I did not know it then, but I was going to spend a great deal of my life on the road. We turned northwards on this road, and as the sun began to fall behind the mountains, we saw the fortress of Calcaria. It was an old Roman fort such as Carefit had told me their legions once lived in. It stood to the east of the road at the end of a short path backing onto the river. The fort itself was oblong in shape, with the short sides parallel with the main road. In the centre of the southern wall there was a gateway, accessed via a bridge, which led over a ditch. The ditch had once been quite deep, but had clearly filled up over the years with the debris of nearby trees and decades of mud that no one had tried to clear. Beyond it there was an earthen embankment upon which stood a stone wall, which had once run continuously around the entire fortress. However, in the 2 centuries since the Romans left, it had decayed and fallen down in many places. Here and there, I could also see signs that it must have been attacked more than once since their departure. These defects were partially repaired by wooden palisades, bricks and stones. We marched through the crumbling gatehouse, closely observed by sentinels standing watch upon the walls and above the gates. Beyond the gatehouse, we entered a road that ran between 2 rows of long, low buildings on either side. Lila was walking beside me and pointed at them. "Those were barracks for their legionaries, or stables for their cavalry. Now look, see there," he continued, indicating a large square, 2-story buildings on the other side of a wide open space we had arrived at. "One of those would have been the headquarters buildings for the legion or regiment that was barracked here. Maybe the larger one. The slightly smaller one now, that would have been the commander's accommodation." We looked at them both. Massive they seemed to me, compared to the villa, which I had always thought to be a palace. Clustered around these, there were other, more diminutive structures, and beyond them all, even more buildings. Like all Roman structures, these buildings were well made, but once they started to decay, the Welsh, like the English, did not possess the skills to maintain them. But whereas we generally avoided the places, the Welsh still lived in them. "What about those?" I asked, indicating some of the buildings. Maybe granaries, storehouses, possibly a workshop, and those further on are more barracks." "More? Just how many men did the Romans have here?" "Hundreds, maybe thousands if they needed them. And this was just one of many forts they had." We stood together, staring around at the impressive sight. "There must have been giants," Cuthbert said, reminding me of a similar conversation we had about the villa years before. Lila shook his head. "No, men just like us. They were just men, but conquered the world. Then they died, and their empire is gone, and these places are all that are left." It was a sobering thought, as if, to emphasise the briefness of glory, a tile slid off a nearby roof and smashed on the ground. We all sunk into gloomy silence, each maybe thinking how short our lives may be right now.
"Makes you think, don't it?" Edward muttered after a moment.
"Silence! You will be silent!" Peridot shouted at us. While Lila had been talking, he had left us under strong guard on the parade ground and gone into the smaller of the main buildings. A few minutes later, he came back and was standing in front of us, glaring. He turned to Wallace.
"You are chieftain of this warband?" Peridot asked in his accented English.
"I am the Lord of Wixton, and this is the Wixton Company," Wallace said defiantly.
Peridot glanced around us all appraisingly and smiled.
"Some army. We caught you half asleep blundering around the countryside. I doubt you could even fight."
"Give us our weapons back, and we'll show you," Wallace countered.
Peridot looked amused but shook his head.
"I don't think so. Now, bring your senior captains and come with me."
"Where are we going?"
"Prince Samlin wishes to see you and talk to you. I warn you to show respect, or you'll regret it."
Wallace nodded at Lila, Sigmund, and 3 of the village leaders, and finally, after a pause, myself. My youth would cause him hesitation, and maybe my rash behaviour at the village was still on his mind, but I did in theory command the largest number of men after him. Perida, accompanied by 5 huge warriors, led us across the ground and up the steps of the largest building. We walked through a small passageway which opened into a central courtyard just like the villa had. To either side were small rooms, offices, Lila told me later. Opposite us were 2 large double doors, with a Welsh warrior standing on either side. They opened as Perida approached. It led us into a rectangular room, in the corner of which were 2 statues of Roman gods, their once bright gold and red paint peeling off. To the left, there was another door, and yet more guards. Perida opened this and entered. Samlin One Eye sat on a chair raised upon a small platform against the opposite wall. To either side, more Welsh warriors and chieftains stood staring at us as we came in. We shuffled forward to stand in front of Samlin, who studied us in menacing silence, like a fox watches a goose waiting for the moment to strike. Finally he spoke. He, like Perida, knew and spoke English with a strong Welsh accent. "Who are you, and what are you doing on my land?" Wallace stepped forward. "Prince Samlin, I am Lord Wallace of Wixton. King Ayla of Deira sends his greetings, and bids me bring a message, and a gift for you." Samlin rose and stood on the platform. Already tall, he now towered over us. "Wixton, where's that?" he asked, and then muttered some words in Welsh to Perida, who replied. "So, you rule that miserable shit heap, full of hovels and filth, a what day's walk east of here. Bloody awful place that was, with very little of value." "Still, you took something of value to us, our families and friends," Wallace's tone was cold. Samlin laughed. "Miserable and feeble lot those are as well. You should have been grateful I took them away and got on with your life. Found yourself some new women and had new children with them. We find we prefer to have them back." Samlin looked at his chieftain and roared with laughter now, and they joined in, although plainly they were not following the English. "What? You thought you could just walk into Elmet and take them, just like that? You really are fools. Well, you can be reunited with them soon, one big, happy slave family." Wallace did not reply, and just stood his ground, staring at Samlin. "Well then, what is this message from the mighty and aged Ayla?" Samlin asked. "Is it to say there will be another delivery of slaves next Tuesday?" he asked, and then he laughed again. "No, I had to deliver a gift to you, so that you would not attack us again." "What gift would mean I would do that? It would have to be impressive." Wallace now smiled, but there was no humour in it. "It is," he said, and stepped closer. Perida looked across at him now, anxiety etched into his face, and he moved towards Wallace. But he was already too late. Wallace had slipped a dagger out of his sleeve, and quick as lightning swung it up towards Samlin's belly. The prince's arm lashed out like a snake's head and grasped Wallace's arm by the wrist, like strength like the jaws of a wolf. He twisted the arm viciously. There was a crack, and Wallace screamed and dropped the blade. Perida now arrived and punched Wallace in the stomach, so he collapsed winded onto the ground. Sigmund and I started forward, but the guards ran out and rammed the butts of their spears into our guts, and we too were forced to the ground. The spears swung around, and now sharp points pricked at our throats. Samlin was glaring at Perida. "Did you not take their weapons?" "Yes, sire, but you must have concealed this one. Forgive me," Perida said, showing his own fear of the one-eyed chieftain. But now Samlin had turned his fury back to Wallace. He kicked him in the stomach, and slammed his foot down on Wallace's broken arm, so that he screamed again in renewed agony. "So, that is Ayla's plan, to assassinate me, and maybe stop our army marching? He knows we have armies gathering, does he? Much good it will do him. I will burn his little country and make him pay." Wallace was back on his knees and spoke in a weak voice. "It was not Ayla's doing. It was my idea. I tried, and I failed. So, if you must burn someone, make it me." Samlin smiled at that. "I may do that. Burning an English lord, eh? Yes, my warriors would like that. Take them away, Perida, and lock them up until I decide their fate." We were abruptly herded out of the door. Perida snapped out an order, and his men pushed and shoved at us with spears and shields. The Welsh chieftain was angry at us now, perhaps thinking that he had been tricked, and also feeling aggrieved that the botched assassination of Samlin was being blamed on him. Around the side of Samlin's hall, there were a few large buildings that may have once been workshops. One of these had large double doors which we were pushed through, and these were then slammed and barred shut behind us. The rest of the company was already here. Sigmund examined Wallace's arm, then looking around the room he found a small length of broken pole, perhaps a table leg or a spear once, and taking strips of cloth from the bindings around his leg, strapped Wallace's arm to it, having first had Edward pull hard on the Lord's hand to straighten the bones as best as they could. Wallace grimaced and gave a slight groan at this, but stood the pain well. Sweating and his face pale, Wallace now quickly told everyone about what had transpired in the other building.
"Well done, my lord, for trying to kill him," Edward grunted, and everyone nodded in agreement.
"What do we do now?" Cuthbert asked loudly. Grettir growled at him to hold his tongue and wait to be told, and so my friend went off in a sulk to the far side of the room and sat down, alone.
"Curdic," Edward said, just visible in the dark room to my side.
"Yes, Ed, what is it?"
"While you were in that room, some Welsh villagers came in bringing food for the garrison here."
"Well, what of it?"
"I recognised one of them."
I felt my heart miss a beat.
"Do you mean—"
"Yes, it was Aidan, here in the fort."
Well, if we could escape, I'd look forward to a chat with my slave."
With a scraping and juddering noise, the door swung open, and a dozen armed guards moved into the room, followed by Samlin. He too was armed, and I gasped as I realised he was carrying my uncle's sword. Standing in front of us now, he glanced around the room, and then at Wallace.
"You were fools to come here hoping to attack this place and rescue your people. Nevertheless, there can be courage in foolishness, and your act," now he pointed at Wallace, "it also showed me you had guts. So I offer you a choice." He opened his arms to include us all. "In fact, I offer you all a choice." He pointed his sword, my uncle's sword, at us. "Your people, the Angles, are doomed. You came here to this land like a tidal wave and swept away all in your path. But the tides are turning. The seas are now going east, and it is you who will be swept away. My people will reclaim what once belonged to us. What will become of you then? Will you be destroyed? You need not be. There is an alternative. Your warriors, join me, and you will write your names in glory in our songs and our stories. Our children will grow up knowing your names. That is the offer I give. Be a warrior in my army. Forget your past, and seize a new future."
He stood, waiting for a response, but none of us answered him. Edward spat to show his feelings. Finally, Lila came forward, and everyone looked at him, and I was not the only one holding my breath.
"You said that our names will be written in stories and poems, and those songs will be known to your children.
I agree." Samlin looked with interest at the bard, but Lila shook his head.
"You're right, but for the wrong reasons. These men will not betray their homes and their king for such a false promise of glory. If their names are written in songs and poetry, it was because I wrote them, and it won't be about Welsh victories over the English, but our revenge over you, Samlin."
Samlin stared at him coldly, and around at the rest of us. Then he moved another piece on the table of our game with him. This move had me stunned.
"There is yet more to my offer, and you have not yet heard it all. Any man can save their lives, and those of any family I hold here, if they will just join me. Your family will be freed, and if you will serve me, you will be given land to farm."
So there it was. If we just stepped forward and knelt and swore loyalty to him, we would be warriors in his army. I would have land, and Mildred would be safe. But I thought, I can now hear Loki laughing, and knew Samlin could not be trusted. No one moved.
"There, you have your answer. Do with us what you will, but we will not join you," Wallace said.
"You fools," Samlin started to reply, but then I just lunged at him with my bare hands, face snarling like a madman, fists flying and feet kicking. Samlin did not move, but just smashed the hilt of the sword into my face, knocking me down. Then he swung the sword up, and it looked like he would kill me.
"Fight me," I shouted.
The sword hesitated, and Samlin looked down at me.
"Who are you, then?"
"That sword is mine. It belongs to my family. I will fight you for it."
The one-eyed chieftain examined the blade for a moment. Then he laughed.
"I don't think so. I killed the man who owned this sword, and I took it from him, took his sister as well, and brought her back here. It was my brother. It was his sword. She is my sister.
Mildreth, fight me. You are nothing. You refuse my offer. You are no longer free. In fact, you are a slave. I do not fight slaves. The sword is mine, and I may take more from you. I may take your sister to my bed, he grinned with a ghastly smile. You should have taken my offer, fool. He laughed and started to walk away, but I was angry now and desperate to kill him. Coward! You're just a coward! He span round and pointed the sword point at my throat. No, you do not get to call me a coward. You seem to think that I will want to defend my honour and meet you in single combat, and that to refuse that challenge would be cowardly. Indeed it would, coming from a warrior of my race, coming from a man of rank, but you... He is Curdic, son of Kenred of the Villa, warrior Dara, and heir to his father's estates. He, Wallace started to say, but was interrupted by Samlin, who slapped Wallace with the back of his hand, splitting his lip, which now started to bleed heavily. Wallace was knocked back against some of his men and stunned into silence. Samlin looked down at him in disgust and then returned to spat at me. You are nothing. Nothing, he roared, his face red with fury. None of you are anything. You take our land and enslave our people and think you are so mighty? Well, you are wrong. Here, you are filth. Here, you are slaves. Slaves have no rights. A freeman, a prince, cannot lose face to such as you. He stomped away towards the door and then turned and looked at the company. Your lives mean nothing. I may hang you all. I may sell you as slaves. I don't care. When I come back, I will decide. He pointed at me and shouted some words to his men, who came forward and pushed Lila, Wallace, and myself out of the door. He then turned back to the rest of the company. Enjoy the next day or so in your fine residence, he said, gesturing with his hands at the decaying Roman workshop. It may be your last. Then the door was shut and barred behind us. Samlin and his men marched out into the parade ground and over to a gallows large enough to hang 10 men. I thought we were going to hang, but Samlin had a longer ordeal planned for us, it seemed. Our hands were lashed together, and then a loop of rope passed under the knot. The other end of the rope was thrown over the crossbeam of the gallows and was heaved up until we hung, suspended from our wrists, with toes barely touching the ground. Finally, it was tied off around the crossbeam. Samlin now stepped back and addressed us. I will be back at the fort soon. My men and I will lay bets on which of you are still alive by then. He squinted up at the skies, where the gathering storm clouds indicated the warm spring days we had enjoyed were now over, for a while at least. Looks like you're going to get wet, he added. Then, laughing, he walked away. The rope dug into my wrists, cutting the skin so that blood was dripping down my arms, which were already going numb. The tension on my shoulders was unbearable, and I was finding it hard to breathe. Next to me, Wallace was groaning, and on my other side, Lila had closed his eyes, perhaps to try and block out the pain. I shivered. The sun was already low in the sky, and soon it started raining. I groaned in despair. We were 15 miles from home and inside hostile territory, bound and strung up with no weapons, at the dubious mercy of a madman who might kill us all on a whim at any moment. And I had absolutely no idea how to escape.